You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. A year ago, Jose Manuel Martinez, a Tulare County native, was facing 10 life terms in prison before a trial in Florida that could have resulted in the death penalty. But Martinez was spared and given another life sentence. He confessed to killing 36 people over the course of 30 years as an assassin for hire. Many of those murders took place in the Central Valley, where he went by the moniker El Mano Negra, the Black Hand. His crimes are the subject of a new book by BuzzFeed Investigations editor Jessica Garrison called The Devil's Harvest. FM89's Laura Satsui spoke to Garrison about what it's like to tell the story of Martinez, a deadly serial killer who evaded police for years before they brought him to justice.
We interviewed you back in 2018 when your BuzzFeed piece came out, and that was sort of tracing, to some extent, the life of Jose Manuel Martinez from his first kill to avenge the death of one of his sisters to when he was finally caught. So talk about what happened between publishing that piece and now publishing your book.
I wrote a lot of words is the short answer. I think when I wrote that piece, as long as it was, I felt like it really had only scratched the surface of the story, because the piece was a lot about his life. But I quickly realized that, you know, what drew me to the story in the first place was, you know, both that it's a crazy story, but also the question of how did he get away with this? Why was he allowed to get away with this? Why did, you know, we as people in California allow this person to kill with impunity and, you know, not find a way to stop it? And when I finished the BuzzFeed piece, one of the things that became clear to me was that part of the answer to that question lay in sort of the place where he was from and the history of the place where he was from and the history of his life in that place where he was from, namely the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. And that there was that also it was just an incredibly rich story. I mean, just about every person who touched this story had their own story that they brought to it, and each of them were just incredible. So that's, you know, part of why I was like, there's a little bit more here. And, you know, off we went.
And then I know, you know, in 2019 was sort of when he was getting charged and sentenced with various things. Can you talk a little bit about where he is now?
So he, you know, his story sort of first came onto my radar in 2014, which is when Alabama announced that they were extraditing him to California, or California announced that they were extraditing him from Alabama to face charges on 9 murders in California. Since that time, he's pled guilty to a murder in Alabama, to 9 murders in California, and then Florida tried to give him the death penalty. And so he was adjudicated on 2 murders in Florida. He was convicted, was not given the death penalty, and is now in prison.
And as you mentioned, I mean, your book points out that part of why he got away with it is to some extent various failings of local law enforcement. They were so close to catching him and they, you know, knew he was around, but he got away so many times. And so can you talk about why it took a murder in Alabama to get him to confess?
The facts are what the facts are. Like, he was a named suspect numerous times, never charged. The reasons for that are complicated. There are certainly a lot of detectives who did work these cases hard. What happened in Alabama is that he committed a murder of someone who was sort of loosely connected to his daughter. And his daughter, who was not involved in any criminal activity whatsoever, police came into her orbit, and her father was like, oh my gosh, I don't want, you know, her. I mean, they weren't going to charge her. They knew she was innocent, but, you know, I think he came back from Mexico, you know, he left California, went briefly to Mexico, and then came back to Alabama and confessed.
And as you mentioned, I mean, one thing I really did enjoy about this book was that you wove in sort of the overarching narrative of, like, the negligence of the community of Early Mart by the Tulare County Board of Supervisors / Tulare County as a municipality. And I'm wondering, and you mentioned a couple different stories of like people deciding they need to organize in order to get things done, in order to hold farmers accountable for pesticide drift, or to say like, we really need a park or a pool for this community. And so, I mean, was there in doing your research a moment where you were like, this belongs, I really need to show sort of the uprising of some of the people in this community? Why did you decide to include that?
I mean, I think for a couple reasons. First of all, because Early Mart's an interesting place, right? It during a lot of the period of this book, the population was about 4,000. Now I think it's about 8,000. It's not rich. It's quite poor. It suffers from a lot of the problems that plague a lot of communities in the Valley. You know, they just, for example, lost their water during a pandemic pretty recently and are now drinking, you know, then another well was brought on and now they've got water that's got some level of contamination. So it's got sort of all of the issues of it. It's also a very tight-knit community. And it's a community where over and over people have said, you know what? No. And so the book highlights two examples of that. You know, one is in the early 80s, there was just a spate of murders in Early Mart. And then I saw an article about a peace march and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, because it's a small town, you could track down people involved in that peace march. And I found a couple people who were like, yes. And then we decided we need a park, but we couldn't get one and we needed a pool. So we decided, you know, I think one of the people was like, we're going to get a pool if I have to dig it myself. That's kind of extraordinary. And then in the late 90s, somebody kind of gassed a great deal of the town. You know, people, there are a lot of people around who remember that, and it was terrible. I mean, this sort of, you know, smell or something comes wafting over the town and all of a sudden people are coughing and they call the fire department and the fire department, you know, doesn't know what it is. And, you know, does the exact wrong thing, which is that they're like, we're going to spray everybody. So they make everybody take off their clothes in the middle of the street and spray them. And the problem is, that was not the right thing to do. A woman named Teresa de Anda just sort of took that in Early Mart and then went from town to town to town and was like, you don't have to put up with this. And, you know, that was important to me because I think part of the story is about how the civic institutions of the Valley treat these towns that in some ways they're not even towns, like they're not incorporated. They're communities, but they don't have any power. They don't have any economic power. They don't have any social power, and they don't have any even like sort of civic or government power. And showing how people reacted to that in different ways felt really important to me.
One thing I kept thinking about is how the story you heard from law enforcement and the story of like who he is from his family are totally different. He was almost like, one thing I thought of was he was almost like a Robin Hood for his family. Like he kind of had this moral code of like people he killed, he often believed were really bad people, and he didn't kill their families. He just went after the person he was told to go after. And he also said that he liked killing, but then when his family talks about him, they say he was so loving. And I don't know, how did you ever reconcile these two stark descriptions of one person? Did it like make sense to you?
No, short answer. I mean, you know, I think you know, when you hear his family talk about him, which, you know, I've seen them, you know, in conversation, and then I've seen them, you know, in a witness stand under oath talking about him. And they paint a portrait, which, you know, of a person who is just like the most caring. I mean, you know, some of the stories are like just astonishing, the lengths to which he went to be supportive of his family and to be there for his family. And then, you know, he was also, and, you know, he freely admits this, like a vicious killer. And I don't know that I've encountered, you know, I mean, I've asked law enforcement, I've asked members of his family, you know, nobody has an explanation for that. And you know, I think to some extent I made a decision in the book that, like, you know, I'm not a forensic psychologist. I'm not a psychologist. And to me, the more sort of pressing question for those of us who, you know, aren't members of his family isn't so much like, why is he like this? It is, you know, why did this happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we have to leave it there, but we've been talking to Jessica Garrison, an investigations editor for BuzzFeed and author of a new book, The Devil's Harvest, which you can find online and purchase there. Jessica, thank you for writing this book and for talking with us about it.
Thank you so much.